This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Is the partnership between American universities and the American public broken? There are those who argue that American universities were designed to educate students while also responding to a public need. But former University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Chancellor Holden Thorpe, along with UNC Chapel Hill Economics Professor Buck Goldstein, think the relationship between American colleges and the public has become strained. They've teamed up once again to write about the American education system. Their latest book is called Our Higher Calling, Rebuilding the Partnership Between America and Its Colleges and Universities. Holden Thorpe is the current provost at Washington University in St. Louis and, as we say, former UNC Chapel Hill chancellor. Holden Thorpe, welcome back.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be with you.
Great to hear your voice again. Buck Goldstein, university entrepreneur in residence and a professor of the practice in the Department of Economics at UNC Chapel Hill. Buck, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you for having us.
Holden Thorpe, this latest book in some ways comes out of the last book that the two of you wrote together. It was about 5 years ago about kind of entrepreneurship on campus. And you say that in some ways it was the way many people misinterpreted that book that caused you to write this one. Tell us more about that.
Yes, well, we were surprised at the reaction to our book in a lot of ways. A lot of it was just the timing. Our book, which talked about entrepreneurship and higher education, came along as a lot of universities were launching entrepreneurship initiatives. And there are really two things that we noticed. One was that the entrepreneurship ideas became maybe even bigger than we would have advocated if we had known how much velocity this whole thing was going to get. And the second thing is that a lot of people thought, okay, well, you guys are talking about businesses. Does that mean that you think we should run the university like a business? And we certainly didn't mean to imply that. And this book is about how a university really is not a business. It doesn't operate under strictly pecuniary measures, and we have members of our community who join our community for reasons to become educated citizens, and faculty who see teaching at the university and staff who see working at the university as a calling, not just their job. And we wanted to kind of get those facts out there and start a conversation about what all this really means.
Well, what does it mean? Buck Goldstein, talk about this relationship. Does the university have a relationship, a kind of compact with the American public?
You know, we discovered that compact as we began working on the book. A professor at Columbia, Jonathan Cole, who has been very influential for both of us, wrote another book where he talked about this compact and traced it back, interestingly, to 1650, when the Commonwealth of Massachusetts gave Harvard a tax exemption. Now, at the time, we really weren't focused on the tax exemption, but if you look at it, it's the single biggest subsidy that higher education gets in the whole country, and it dwarfs anything else. As you know, some of that is now being questioned by some of our policymakers in Washington, but in general, that was the beginning of the compact. And as we trace in the book, it evolved in 1865 with the Morrill Act and then the GI Bill and then the National Science Foundation and all the support for research. But yes, it may not be well understood by all members of our community, but the public is in big time in terms of support of higher education.
So, Holden Thorpe, what does that mean about the responsibility that universities have to live up to their end of the bargain? And obviously, your book suggests that things have changed. So let's start with what you think that responsibility should be, and then we'll talk more about how it may have changed. Holden Thorpe?
Yes. Well, as we've seen over the years that we trace, you know, the Morrill Act was really something that led to the land-grant universities in exchange for teaching the practical arts, it says in the actual act. When the National Science Foundation was started, the idea was that, and the NIH and the other agencies, that the federal government would provide the support, but the universities would do the research and also, importantly, assume all the risk for doing the research. And so what has really happened is that over the years, mostly administrators, have worked with the public and the federal government and promised various things that universities would do in exchange for the support. And we haven't always done a perfect job of telling our internal community what the terms of this are. And that's why one of the things we talk about here is making this implicit compact into an explicit partnership. And so the book is divided into sections where we talk about what the university expects: tenure, academic freedom, control of the curriculum, a commitment to the liberal arts. And then the latter half of the book, we talk about a lot of the promises that have been made, in some cases unbeknownst to some folks inside of our community, world-class medical care, starting companies that drive the economy, making sure our students get jobs, driving the development of college towns. You know, these are two sides of the coin that really haven't been called out together in the way that we've done here.
Well, how do we see that missing, Buck Goldstein? Where is it if the university or and faculty and staff are not living up to that end of the bargain? Where do we – how do we see that? How's that reflected?
Well, in a number of ways. Some of our colleagues, for instance, believe that we have no real responsibility to help students get a job or a good job. And as we say in the book, as we focus on access to higher education, it's no longer okay just to get a job, get your foot in the door, and make coffee and work your way up. If you're married, you have a family, and you have responsibilities, you need not just a job but a good job. That's not universally embraced or understood, and honestly, placement sometimes is a little bit above or below parking as a major issue on a college campus. So that's one example. I think impact of research is another. The responsibility not only to do important scientific research, but to translate that research and make a difference for the state and the country and the world. Many scientists and academics understand that, but there's also a school of thought that says research for its own purposes is enough. And we talk a lot in the book about the various kinds of research and how important they all are. But again, and I think lastly, it's just dialogue. The responsibility to welcome the public on our campus, the responsibility to reach out to the public, and the responsibility to engage with the public. And I don't think that's generally among all of our colleagues embraced.
Well, Holden Thorpe, let's take them one at a time, and we'll start with placement, because it seems to me that one of the other things that's changed, and you do talk about this in the book, that is the expectation of the student. Students who come in expecting this has now become a real transactional relationship. I'm not coming here for a liberal education to expand my mind and broaden my experience. I want a job, which is to say, if you're not providing those jobs, if students are looking at that, families are looking at that, won't universities fail on the intake side if they aren't providing jobs? It seems to me that takes care of itself.
Yeah, well, this is a really challenging point. And let me just say about when you said faculty and staff aren't living up to their end of the bargain. Well, for a lot of cases, we haven't asked them in the right way to live up to that. And that's part of what we're advocating here. As it comes to career services, you know, we interviewed somebody who's prominent in the book, Chris Newfield, who's a very prominent liberal critic, humanist who writes about universities. And when we asked him, you know, what he thinks about this whole issue, we were really surprised when he said, well, we're on the hook. We were expecting him to be in the camp that said that an educated citizenry was the entire goal of a college education. But he's looked closely at universities, and he's realized something that we also believe, which is that there might have been a time when we could have made that case 30, 40, 50 years ago. But over time, we've allowed this expectation to evolve. And because we haven't been talking transparently to all of the parties here, we've now got to a point where the university, even in the minds of somebody like Chris Newfield, is on the hook to do a good job with career services for all their students.
But Buck Goldstein, it does seem to me that it can raise a fear among some that this is that the university was the one place where we could go to broaden our mind, and it's not like making you a totally useless human being, giving you skills that you could never use. But the fact is, this is the one place I don't have to. This is not vocational education, and if we become vocational education, there is no place where we can open minds in the way a university.
It's true, and we believe it's not either or, it's both and. Okay, which says we don't want to relegate university education to shop class because, as we say over and over, our students are going to have 20 different jobs during their careers. So when parents say, well, why aren't you educating our kids for a job, our response is, well, tell us the job you would suggest that we educate them for. Because the best jobs, your child is a freshman. By the time they graduate, the best jobs available to them won't even be invented when they started as a freshman. That begins to suggest that we need to do both. On the other hand, we don't do as good a job with entry-level work, which is how do you get your first job? So the focus needs to be both and, but I would say you mentioned transactional, and this is sobering. Since 1980 to the present, the percentage that of college costs that students and their families shoulder has gone up 400%. So, yes, it's become much more transactional than it used to be because the arithmetic is fundamentally different than it used to be.
And Holden Thorpe, you talk about that a lot in your book and the impact that that's having on this relationship. Talk more about that.
Yes, well, just about one last thing about career services. There's also an equity piece to this because if universities don't provide progressive career services, what happens is it's only the wealthy students who come in with family connections who end up getting good jobs. And so what you're doing is, you know, you have a progressive financial aid program where you're letting low-income students in, but if you don't do a good job of placing them, then they're going to be just as far behind their wealthy classmates as they were. Now, as far as the college costs and the arithmetic and all that is concerned, yeah, that's another reason why this is so important, because the rate at which the costs are increasing and the difficulty that comes with doing all of these things, you know, we need more money and we have to continue to have public support, not only salvaging the public support that we've had, but building it even further. And so we believe that, you know, having an open dialogue about these various issues is going to allow us to increase public support. And as Buck is saying, that public support is in the form of appropriations from the North Carolina legislature to UNC, but it's also in the form of the tax exemption that all institutions experience. It's support for the NIH, it's federal support for financial aid, it's state support for financial aid. All of these things are going to be required, and we have to have a very cooperative relationship with the public if we're going to sustain that.
Buck Goldstein, you talk about this book, you and Holden both, as being the start of a conversation about this issue, and you do have some suggestions. Namely, you think that universities and their administrators need to stay connected and that teachers need to focus on teaching, professors.
We couldn't agree more. In fact,
Well, that's from your book. That's not my opinion. Go ahead.
In fact, we believe everybody should teach. And we believe that anyone on a college campus who's qualified to teach, from the chancellor on down, should teach. It's the only way to really stay connected with the institution itself, that events occur that are unanticipated. But if you're not connected to students, you're not able to provide the kind of leadership that all of us are compelled to do if we're serving on a college campus. And, you know, the administration, the administration, the permanent bureaucracy will always say, you don't have time to teach. You've got too many other things to do. I'll let Holden answer, go from there, because Holden still teaches, right?
Holden?
Yes, I think, you know, just to give the background on this, there are a lot of good academic reasons why faculty would have reduced teaching loads, because they're involved in research or they're involved in other things helping the university. The problem with that is that the public is not prepared to understand how that can be the case. I mean, every college professor, every graduate student gets so frustrated when they go home for Thanksgiving dinner and their uncle asks them what they do with all their time off. And I get how painful that is. They say, oh, well, you're only teaching one or two classes. You know, what do you do with the other 30 hours a week? Every one of us cringe when we go home for Thanksgiving dinner and have to put up with that. The reality, unfortunately, is that that conversation has been there for so long that it's really unlikely that we're going to move the needle on that. And as we are clamoring for every bit of public support that we can get, we just need to be able to give a simpler answer, which when somebody says, well, is this famous scientist teaching undergraduates, we want to just be able to say yes. We don't want to say, oh, they're not, and here's all the complicated academic nuanced reasons why it's okay that they're not. We're in a much more urgent situation that requires us to be able to just give a very straightforward answer that says, of course, anyone who's here is, we like to say, teaching with abandon, because we need to recruit young people to our disciplines. You know, it's such a great thing in America that students don't come in with their major preset as they do in so many other countries. And so that means if you want philosophers or biologists or historians, you can walk into a class of first-year students and give an inspiring class and engage them, and suddenly you have people who are interested in all these things. And so we just want people to be wildly enthusiastic about that, and I think that will lead to a lot more support from the public.
Lots of good suggestions and grist for a longer conversation in your new book, Our Higher Calling. But Holden Thorpe, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the current controversy on your old campus, UNC Chapel Hill. Silent Sam comes down. The protests continue. What do you make of all this?
Well, as I've said a number of times when I've been in Chapel Hill and people have asked me this, you know, there's never been a day since the day I became the University of North Carolina's 10th chancellor until today where I haven't wondered whether I could have done more to get that statue down. You know, it's an awful statue with horrible symbolism, and those of us who know about stereotype threat know that if you're an African-American student who has to walk by that statue, that, you know, there are clear penalties that you would pay in terms of your education. And so I think every academic that I know that's been in the UNC administration would want to see Silent Sam taken down. And I think it's a great thing that it's down. Good congratulations to the activists who were able to do that. Those of us who study universities are not surprised that in the end it wasn't chancellors who got Silent Sam down. It was the students.
Well, talk about that. I'm going to put you on the spot, because there's been a lot of criticism of your successor, Carol Folt's, leadership in all of this. What's your take on it?
Well, she has all of my support, because there's only one person who knows all the facts. And she has come out and said that she doesn't want the statue put back up. That is the most important thing, that not happen. She's in a very complicated political environment where she has to deal with politically appointed trustees, politically appointed board of governors, a system president, a legislature, and she's the only one who knows all of the private conversations that have happened. And if she decided that the right thing to do was to hang back and say after the statue's down that she doesn't want to put it back up, then, you know, I feel compelled to trust her. I agree with all of my faculty colleagues, and I'm still Keenan Professor Emeritus, so they're my colleagues. who have issued statements saying that the statue shouldn't be there. I agree with them. I believe Carol Folt agrees with them as well, and I believe that she's doing the best she can with all the facts she has to make sure that that horrible racist statue doesn't get put back up in the front of the campus.
Holden Thorpe, current provost at Washington University in St. Louis, Buck Goldstein, University Entrepreneur in Residence. They're the author of the new book, Our Higher Calling. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank
Great to be with you, Frank.
Us.
There's more to come on the state of things. Stay tuned.